Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Gorgeous Reads. We have a special spot today. It's the British Roadmap Puzzle Book, which has been compiled and edited, and all the puzzles done by Helen Brocklehurst. Welcome, Helen.
Oh, thank you very much for having me, Donna.
So tell us about, I think you had specialist experience that led you to be able to put this book together.
Yes, in a way. I am no cartographer, but I am primarily a publisher and was very pleased to run AA Publishing for many years. And AA Publishing produces the UK's best-selling roadmaps. So I have actually learnt quite a lot about mapping from that job. And after I left, we thought it would be really good fun to do a puzzle book. And I guess I was a natural choice as an author, partly because I always loved setting quizzes for my team and puzzles. And so there was a sort of a history there, a sort of bit of an in-joke. And also, I was really familiar with the history and the AA archives, so it was really nice going and sort of scrubbing through all of the old maps and atlases and seeing how the mapping had changed over time. So that gave me a bit of an inside line to be able to put this book together.
I was going to say, because the book is filled with history, inevitably.
Yeah. So there's lots of history involved. I mean, there's the history of roads, because some of the most interesting roads are ones that have actually been travelled for centuries, and I got really fascinated by that. And then there's also the history of mapping and actually travel and how that's changed over time. So, you know, when the AA was founded in 1905, it was obviously founded because of the car. And that's the point at which people suddenly decide that they need to travel. There's this sort of transport revolution, and more people need to know how to get from A to B. That was actually how the AA mapping department grew up. It grew from a routing department where, if you were a member, you could write to the AA and you could say, I need to go from Oxford to Gloucester and please can you supply me directions? And they would write back with these really charming handwritten directions, say, go across at the next crossroads and then turn right onto this road. So, and that became a very, very large routing department. And in the early 1920s, their routes literally just consisted of these handwritten cards giving details of the route between two different points. And then they started writing information about local places of interest on the reverse of the cards. And then by kind of the end of the 20s and early 30s, they were publishing tours as well as routes, the idea that you would actually want to go touring in your car. And these tours could take several days. And the information would include, you know, remarks about the scenery and, you know, advice about ferry crossings if you were going across the water. Then in the 30s, they start to add mileages. And so you can see this routing service evolve into what eventually became their best-selling atlases. And also their AA route planner. So in 1999, they launched a website, which became one of the UK's biggest websites, where you could type your route in, and obviously it was a front runner in that pioneering that technology. So it was really fun to look through all of the different, you know, mapping and how that had evolved, but also to think about the social history that wrapped around all of that too.
I would say that is absolutely charming, those handwritten routes, but you can also see it also reflects and mirrors the very British sense of knowing the A roads and the B roads. And when I first moved here, as you can hear, I'm American, and I didn't drive. And, you know, people would say, "Oh, how did you get here? Did you take the A this and the B that and the B?" And I was like, "What are you talking about?" Anyway, but so now that I drive, I too can bore everybody with my route knowledge. But that is one of the things, you know, I mean, there's always these programs, you know, driving the B roads, you know, the sort of back roads to places.
Yes. It's a very British thing, isn't it? You're
yes.
Right.
Yes, it totally is. But you can see why now. That total evolution that you just talked about is, you know, is exactly why and how, you know, I think the sense of Britishness that you do want to go from one place to the other, that there are special things in all of these places that connect us. And, you know, I think that's actually a really lovely unifying.
Yes, I think that's a good point. And the other thing that is uniquely British, I think, is the number of alternative routes that there are. There are lots of ways of getting anywhere, which is why it becomes a point of conversation.
Yes, endless.
You know, you don't have that many options. And then it becomes this sort of, you know, can you beat kind of, you know, Google or the AA's route? You know, do you know that if you've got a better insight into the way to get from A to B at that particular time of day, for whatever reason, because, you know, there's going to be extra traffic or the dustman comes on a Monday or whatever it is.
Yes, and I think that lends itself very naturally, therefore, to a puzzle book and quizzes. Because, you know, if there's anything we like better is that competitive knowledge of driving.
Yes, exactly. So there are some routing questions and some kind of observational questions, so you kind of really have to look at the map. And there are some other questions where the map might just contain a clue to the answer. So what appears to be some sort of real recherche general knowledge that you have to have, actually you can probably work out if you look at the map well enough and take the clues. And there are math puzzles in there for mathematically minded, and word puzzles for people who like doing cryptic crosswords and that kind of style of thing. So there really is something for everyone in here, I think.
Radio Gorgeous, created by women for women. RadioGorgeous.com.
I think it's the perfect Christmas gift, because younger members of the family can be brought into map reading, etc., and the older members of the family can be the smarty pantses.
Yes, that's right. exactly. But actually, children have really eagle eyes, you know.
Yes.
And are very, very good at looking at things. I think there's also, and this is a huge generalization, but men like to think that they're very, very good map readers. And you tend to think that, you know, a book like this, you know, my dad would really like it. But actually, there are, a lot of women who have got a really, really good eye for detail, and you really need that when you're reading a map. And then, you know, in the same way that, you know, kids are able to spot things sometimes because their eyes are so good.
Well, that
really honed in on the small detail.
I think that's a very interesting point, because I didn't drive for so long, I was an excellent navigator. And part of navigating is anticipating, and then, you know, knowing what you're looking out for to not make the driver do any last minute things, which is stressful. This is an art my husband does not have, which I have. But also your point about kids, because so much there's been, I wasn't taught it, and I don't think you were probably taught it at school, but they're taught now to do these sort of mind maps. And so it is a sort of natural thing. But I have a difference. I love reading maps. I love maps in general. I think they're a great objet. I mean, they're just great objects. I love atlases. I love knowing, you know, on the plane, I love looking at the plane routes. But I do find that different from a street map. Street maps, I find difficulty orienting myself, but roadmaps I'm great with. My husband's the opposite.
That's interesting. I agree with you. So, if any of us were put on a desert island, the first thing we would probably start to do would be to map it in our brain, certainly. And then, if it were me, I would sort of want to be seeing it on paper if I had, if I had a pen and paper, I would literally start drawing a map. And it's because, being able to put your knowledge into some form, which is what you're saying about the mind maps, and that's all it is really. It's helping to build layer upon layer of detail and greater knowledge. And so I think that is a very, very, very instinctive thing. It's to have knowledge of our surroundings because it enables us to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maps tend to be loved by quite independently minded people. I've always observed this, that people who don't want to just be told, oh, this is how you get here, or but really want to kind of understand the environment and figure things out for themselves and make their own decisions, would much prefer to have a map.
That is 100% my experience. We'll get in the car, and my husband said, well, I have it on the computer here, and I have it on the set. I'm like, but I need to see it. I need to see it. I need to know where I'm going. I need to know sort of what I'm anticipating. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's seen by my family as a control freak aspect of me, but it is a way, I mean, maybe that's true too. But I also... Sorry, but tell me about sat-nav and what that's doing. Because I notice, if I go somewhere by sat-nav, I have no idea where I've been. Like, I'm just following directions.
Exactly. So I think sat-nav is brilliant. I'm a map lover, but there is definitely room for sat-nav in my life.
Yes. You can't read a map and drive at the same time.
When we had to find our way using that, Sony, we were pulling into lay-bys all the time, having arguments because it was, frankly, downright dangerous. You're having to make last-minute degree decisions and that kind of thing. So actually having somebody calmly tell you that you need to turn off at the next junction is lovely, and particularly if you are by yourself and you're driving to a new place, and particularly if it's a city, I find it really useful if I've got a meeting in a town or a city that I'm not familiar with. I mean, thank goodness for the sat-nav, where you have to make lots of turns very quickly. And I think digital mapping does make that kind of plastic space, all those spatial abilities, much easier. So it's really much easier to know where you are in the first place, because if you open an atlas, the first thing is, okay, well, where am I? I've got to find myself, I've got to self-locate. So it's really already done for you digitally. Then the second thing is that if you're having to look at a map the night before and perhaps remember your way somewhere, you've got to have a really good route memory, and most of us don't have very good route memory, actually. So all of that need to kind of remember all of the different steps. There's a stranger telling you how to get to the theatre or something, and you take the next left and you go straight on. All of that is done for you. And then the other thing is this classic thing of map rotation, which you have where actually you're driving from north to south and you end up sort of moving the map around. Of course, you don't have to worry about any of that stuff with the center. So in many ways, it's brilliant, brilliant technology. But I think what we've lost is this bigger picture that you were talking about, and the context, and kind of really actually understanding the country that you've traveled through, particularly on a long journey. If you, go on holiday, part of the pleasure of that is the discovery. And I think that you just don't get that at all with a sat nav in the same way. And certainly even in parts of the UK, there's still pretty poor satellite coverage, actually, if you're going to really remote areas. At those occasions where there's a road diversion we've all had moments where the sat-nav has actually let us down, and then you feel really exposed. And the AA did some surveys a while ago, actually a couple of years ago, and discovered that most people, even if they were, relied on their sat-nav, they would always carry a paper atlas in the car, because I think that you just need that as backup. you know, in the way that you need like a first aid kit or something, it's kind of, it's really, really key to feel that it's actually, you know, if the sat nav lets me down, I'm not going to be entirely distracted.
We actually had that exact experience because, you know, the sat nav had us going, and this was on a, it literally took 9 hours to get to Wales from London, which it should not do. But there were various reasons for that. But one of them was that we had, for some reason, taken the Atlas out of the car and it hadn't made its way back in. And so we were, you know, captives of the sat nav.
Yeah.
And that was, it was, we were all, you know, cursing about it, you know, because we were like, we have no choice now because we have no idea where we are. And
it just went wrong. It just had no idea.
Yeah. And it kept, I mean, eventually got us there, but it was like the most roundabout route possible. And it was just, it was unendurable after a while. And then to arrive in Wales and it's pouring out and you have to pitch tents. It was not a happy day. All due. Yeah. And it was all down to not having an atlas. You know, it all could have been solved. I'm sure it would have been sunny out if we'd had an atlas.
I mean, there's no doubt, you know, there's no doubt that atlas sales have declined. But I think what's happened at the same time is that people just are collecting maps. And, you know, you talked about that sort of love of them as objet, and I think that that is, there's really been a resurgence in that, probably like partly a nostalgia driven resurgence, but and very beautifully mapped places as well, and artistically mapped places, and places that kind of maps that give you some sort of, you know, insight into the sort of psychogeography, you know. I think that that more than ever, actually, we really rediscovered our love of maps of late. And
yes.
I'm sure it is due to, you know, some poor sat nav experiences as well.
Yes. Well, and also, my husband has a collection of maps, you know, that you would use for walking. So of the very, like in the Peak District and the Lake District, those maps that show you the topography of the place and, you know, that's that kind
of
stuff.
That doesn't really do that very, you know.
Nope.
GPS devices, they don't really do that. So when you're looking at kind of the different categories of mapping and how they fared, you know, since the sort of the height of map sales was about 2005. And then if you look at the different categories, actually street maps declined really, really, really quickly.
Yes.
For pretty obvious reasons.
Yeah, the A to Z.
Walking maps. Yeah, I mean, walking maps barely, you know, are barely touched. They, you know, they've held up really well, and because it's still the best way of doing it, I think. It's still pretty good technology.
Good piece of tech. It reached its peak in 1930. Well, Helen, I'm sure this has been an absolute pleasure to work on, and thank you. It's going to be an absolute pleasure to work with.
Thank you. It really has been. It's been a lovely job. Really, really enjoyable, and I've just been able to, you know, use my inner geek really.
Excellent. Well, I'm looking forward to finding mine. And thank you so much for being on Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
And for more absolutely fascinating nerdy women, go to www.radiogorgeous.com.
Radiogorgeous.com.